content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, my name is Naomi Lambert from the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will share articles with you from The Assembly, which publishes in-depth reporting on North Carolina at theassemblync.com. Starting today with an article from the culture section, Putting the Gold in Golden Years, and this article is by Billy Warden. The team from Charlotte is graying and a bit stooped here and there, but as brassy as primetime Muhammad Ali when it comes to smack talk. We're back, we're better, we have no fear, nothing can stop us. This is our year. The 8 men and 6 women ranging in age from 72 to 94 hail from the Barclay at South Park, one of the many senior living communities strewn across North Carolina and the Southeast, like the gems embedded in a boxer's championship belt. The Barclay battlers crossed 172 miles to compete against elite squads from 11 other senior communities in the Carolinas, Tennessee and Florida, owned and operated by Wilmington-based Liberty Senior Living. For 3 brisk March days, Raleigh's Hayes Barton Place was host to the 5th annual Liberty Games. This year's competition featured 150 contenders in seated bowling and shot put, standing table tennis and bocce ball, a water balloon toss and a water balloon drop, Scrabble, bridge, and a handful of other contests spread across a heated indoor pool, putting green, and activity rooms. The showdown mirrors the fierce competition between senior living Shangri-Las to win the trust and treasure of the silver-haired set flocking to the state. According to the NC Office of State Budget and Management, by 2030, one of every 5 Tar Heels will be 65 or older. By the early 2040s, more residents will be over 65 than under 18. The games show just how action-packed the active lifestyles at these facilities can be. In its marketing materials, Liberty promises a program to help residents improve all aspects of their physical, emotional, spiritual, and mental health. Society once called retirement havens rest homes. Today's upper echelon models are revved up and on the move. At Hayes Barton Place, an elaborate opening ceremony included a color guard and a keynote address from 2012 Olympic swimming gold medalist and friend of Michael Phelps, Charlie Hushin, a Raleigh native. But the pièce de résistance are the cheers, composed and vigorously delivered by each of the 12 competing squads. Tricked out in purple and teal jerseys a la the Charlotte Hornets and brandishing matching pompons, the Crown Town team knuckles down on the competition. We're back, we're better, we have no fear, nothing can stop us, this is our year. On the second stanza, a few of Barclay's scrappers wag their index fingers squarely at the team from the Templeton of Carey, the 3-time reigning champs. The wagging fingers send a lightning bolt zagging through the crowd. Some titter, some snort. The Templeton team is quiet, cool. They know, as one of the members later says, we have a target on our back. The effect is like Ali goading champ George Foreman on the eve of the rumble in the jungle, or Joe Willie Namath's guarantee of a Jets Super Bowl victory. It's the stuff of legend, if Barclay lives up to it. Baby chasers and superstars. From the podium, MC Haley Kinney Norris watches the cheer, then wide-eyed chortles, "You pointed!" Kinney Norris, Liberty's 30-year-old spark-plug corporate director of life enrichment and wellness, created the games as a celebration of camaraderie, sportsmanship, and connecting with peers. The boldness of the chant shouldn't come as a surprise. These are competitive and accomplished people, and their coaches have stoked the fire. ABT, says Anna Eagle, Barclay's wellness director, with the raise of an eyebrow that could mean all about team, could mean anyone but Templeton. And the athletes know time may not be on their side. Carpe diem indeed. We came in second at the last games, says Barclay's Marilyn Prensky, 81. But we're much older now, Deb Pans, her husband of six decades, Ira, 83. Marilyn laughs. Yes, a year is a long time at our age. To determine their lineups at the Liberty Games, each community held hotly contested qualifying rounds. My parents, Bill and Nancy Warden, performed well in the water balloon drop at Hayes Barton Place, where they've lived for about a year. This contest involved ascending to a fifth-floor apartment and dropping softball-sized water balloons off the balcony with the intention of hitting a bullseye stretched out on the grass below. Marilyn Prensky is a quadruple threat, making the cut in shuffleboard, bridge, cornhole and swimming, even though she only learned to swim a few months ago. Better late than never, she remarks. The Prenskys are baby chasers, seniors who migrated to be near their families. They abandoned Tucson to be closer to their daughter and sole grandchild in Charlotte. Marilyn glows like a kid herself, ambling between the themed food stations at the post-opening reception, from a low country shrimp boil to a Tennessee brisket. A signature cocktail helps send all this down the hatch, the gold medal margarita. Artie Linworth, 83, of Wellington Bay, Florida, is no stranger to medals, having earned a half dozen at previous games, gold and otherwise. He's a Liberty Games superstar, the event's own Mr. Sunshine, beloved for brightening each opening ceremony with a cartwheel. Since retiring from the chemical industry, Linworth has penned three self-help books, including Slice the Salami, Tips for Life and Leadership, One Slice at a Time. He also teaches Tai Chi, which emphasizes balance, the best way to avert a broken hip. With a few of Linworth's friends ill, the Wellington Bay team was smaller than in previous years, but that doesn't dim his spirit. We're highly energized, he assures, eager for the win. After the reception, he and other visiting competitors head off to the Hilton Raleigh North Hills, where they are lodging on the tab of Liberty and 19 event sponsors, which include banks, healthcare providers and a wedding and elopement photography shop and a purveyor of fitness equipment. Age doesn't define you, Linworth offers before departing. Attitude does. Surfing the Silver Tsunami. If it's high-stakes competition you seek, try developing and operating senior living facilities these days. There's nothing more difficult, said Michael Sandman, a lead developer of the Cypress of Raleigh. It's incredibly complicated. The Cypress is officially called a Continuing Care Retirement Community, or CCRC. These are designed to accommodate seniors with a variety of needs, from independent living to on-site assisted care, should dementia and other debilitating malady take hold. But that's like describing a Lamborghini Veneno Roadster as a mere motor vehicle. Upmarket CCRCs and senior living communities are retirement heavens with soaring lobbies in place of pearly gates, small armies of attendants, a variety of eateries, and endless opportunities to exercise, socialise and otherwise squeeze the most out of dear, sweet, precious life. Behind the polished marble and leafy courtyards, operators navigate complex regulatory and healthcare requirements. As if delivering all of that isn't enough of a challenge, the product is pitched at one of the toughest audiences imaginable, discerning people of means, with competitors huffing down your neck or vaulting past you. Sandman describes the clientele as educated, sophisticated and affluent, with high expectations. The Cypress opened in 2008, just in time for the retirement of the mighty baby boomer generation. The 80 million people expected to retire between 2007 and the early 2030s make up the Silver Tsunami. Developers have been eager to ride the wave. Over the last two decades, a dozen CCRCs have opened across North Carolina, while older models have modernized and expanded, from Brunswick Forest near Wilmington to Raleigh's Cardinal at North Hills with its 18-story penthouse apartments to Legacy at Mills River, a self-described laid-back luxury living environment now under construction near Hendersonville. As challenging as it was, the Cyprus is the most personally satisfying project I've ever been involved in, no question, hands down, said Sandman, who's also developed hotels and condos. It's a hard mental hurdle to leave a home that you presumably love. You look in the mirror and you see someone 10 years younger than you really are, he said. We're helping people plan what's next. The expectations should be high. The CEO and the cowboy. After the first day of competition, Barclays' vision of triumph lies in shatters. They are ranked 11th out of 12. Eagle, the hard-charging Barclays wellness director, assesses their performance in the staccato style of poker-faced NFL coaches. We didn't have as good a day as anticipated, but we have a strong lineup for tomorrow. You could argue, though, that in the big game of life, everyone at the games is, by at least one measure, a winner. Not only are they up for travel and competition, they have the resources to live well. The cost range for independent living arrangements at the Cardinal, for example, runs between $7,500 and $18,000 per month, depending mostly on the size and location of the residence. A penthouse atop the tower will cost you a pretty penny compared to a more earthbound apartment. The players at the Liberty Games put the gold in golden years. Their ranks include retired CEOs, senior VPs, MDs and PhDs. Dan Strittmatter, 85, is a resident of Brightmoor of South Charlotte and a former CEO who traded the boardroom for the cornhole court. Broad of chest, his demeanour throws an arm around your shoulder and pulls you close, even if his hands remain in his pockets. I've met a lot of nice people here, and I like some of the old ones too, Strittmatter cracks. But at the cornhole finals, he meets his match, a cowboy with a countenance that would give Clint Eastwood the quivers. Glenn Lewis, 94, doesn't say much. I grew up on a horse, he allows in a low tone that's as much gravel as voice, out west, in California, Reagan country. Lewis lost his wife of 70 years in 2024. In his ball cap, mountain strong T-shirt, baggy blue jeans and butter-coloured belt, he takes top honours in cornhole and bocceball, helping to lift the Pisgah Valley team to within striking distance of the leader, Hayes Barton Place. Meanwhile, cartwheel king Linworth delivered his team, Wellington Bay, medals in the water balloon toss, shuffleboard, table tennis, water walk, track walk and shot put. But it's the Barclay team that puts together the most impressive winning streak of day two. They take 7 medals in the swimming events, including a silver for Marilyn Prensky. In a display of unfailing style decorum, one competitor reportedly slips into the heated waters, still wearing her pearls. The clamour of the spectators surrounding the cavernous indoor pool is so raucous it nearly blows out my dad's hearing aid. The comeback kids. In the evening, the players trade their active wear for pantsuits, slacks, blazers, and in one case, a lemon-yellow chiffon gown for the annual banquet. Hilton's staff supply the ballroom with chicken, salmon, and steak, but the main event is the big reveal of the overall winning team. Before the big moment, Kinnear Norris, the event's tireless creator and a phalanx of wellness directors, bestow blingy medals on each of the individual winners. They also vamp through a series of tech problems. Call my grandson, an audience member jokes. That's what I always do. Linworth smiles sagely as he accepts a surprise medal for embodying the spirit of the games. Few in the room know this could well be his last appearance. In January, his wife died after a protracted bout with Alzheimer's. Linworth wasn't alone during that ordeal. His friends and neighbours rallied around him. And he had Carola, his wife's caretaker, to lean on. Earlier in March, Linworth proposed to Carola. When they marry, he will become stepdad to her 7-year-old son, who is a few decades shy of the age requirements to live at Wellington Place. So the cartwheel king will move out, move on. People might say I'm crazy, he says with a catch-me-if-you-can glimmer. But that's me. Finally, the MC gets to the countdown of team finishes. Templeton, the three-time reigning champ, lands at number 5. Hayes Barton Place, the home team, settles for 2nd. And the 2026 Liberty Games champion is Kinney Norris Milks the Moment. Charlotte's Barclay at South Park. The tenacious team, who dared to promise victory during the opening ceremonies, comes darn close to leaping out of their seats, still waggling their purple and teal pom-poms. They lunge for hugs, then carefully steady each other. Tears erupt when the team FaceTimes a staff member back in Charlotte. "We never gave up," Marilyn Prensky proclaims. "We kept pushing through." Coach Eagle staggers around, delightedly dazed, before sinking to her knees, crying, "Oh my God, oh my God," from 2nd to last to 1st. Nearby, Ira Prensky breaks from the hurrahing to take a big bout out of tonight's dessert, chocolate cake. He's no longer in training, after all. "It's good," he says, "not of the cake, but of the win. It's encouraging. There's life after 50, 60, 70, 80, 90. Pick a number. There's life." Our next article comes from the business section. Feds fine Durham-based energy efficiency company $722 million. And the article is by Lisa Sorg. The Federal Energy Regulation Commission has fined Durham-based American Efficient $722 million and ordered the company to repay more than $410 million in unjust profits for alleged fraud in its energy efficiency program. In an April 15th ruling, FERC claims American Efficient withheld key information from the electric grid operators that allowed the company to manipulate energy markets. An American Efficient spokesperson said the company stands by its position that the commission's allegations are meritless and that it did not commit any wrongdoing. FERC took issue with the company's business model. Durham entrepreneur Ben Abram and his company, Weiland Capital, purchased American Efficient in 2013. Since then, it has been an energy-efficient aggregator that buys sales data and environmental attributes, the inherent characteristics of light bulbs, appliances, and other products that make them energy-efficient, from large retailers like Lowe's as well as other companies. American Efficient then used that sales data to calculate the energy savings from the anticipated use of the lighting and appliances, entering those projected savings into capacity auctions. At capacity auctions, grid operators pay for the ability of traditional power suppliers and utilities, as well as energy efficiency aggregators like American Efficient, to produce power when needed. Ratepayers ultimately pay for the costs of fuel through their respective utilities. The decision was unanimous among the 5 commissioners, 2 Democrats and 3 Republicans. "I don't vote lightly for disgorgement and civil penalties this high," said FERC Commissioner Lindsay C., a Biden appointee, at a public meeting last week. "But we've not been faced with a scam that robbed ratepayers of hundreds of millions of dollars in this way before." Energy Efficient has fought with every legal tool they can muster, and it's easy to understand why, because their entire business is at stake. Their entire business is a scam. The 2 other Biden appointees, Judy Chang and David Rosen, criticized American Efficient for sullying legitimate energy efficiency programs that actually reduce demand. FERC Commissioner David Lassert, a Trump appointee, said he will refer the case to the U.S. Department of Justice for a possible criminal investigation. Lassert said at the public meeting that he is concerned about how American Efficient spent its proceeds from the capacity auctions, which the company says in a press release included solar projects in Brazil. "While I do not take lightly the weight of a criminal referral, the interests of justice demand it," Lassert wrote in a concurring opinion. "American Efficient's conduct is not only market manipulation, but a fundamental betrayal of the environmental and reliability principles that have been used to justify energy efficiency resources in the first place." The investigation into American Efficient began nearly 5 years ago after independent market monitors alerted the FERC's enforcement staff as Inside Climate News previously reported. Grid operators like PJM, which operates in many states, including Northeast North Carolina, hire market monitors to ensure the wholesale energy markets are fair and to potentially identify potential manipulation. American Efficient pays a few cents to these entities per product sold. Micropayments ostensibly meant to encourage retailers to promote efficient products. In turn, use of more efficient products would reduce energy demand, air pollution, and greenhouse gas emissions. American Efficient declined an on-the-record interview and instead provided statements by an unnamed company spokesperson. What made this approach different is that the end user wasn't the only party that could move the needle on energy efficiency, a company spokesperson said. The micropayments sent a powerful signal through the supply chain. FERC argued that a $0.05 payback or 5-cent payback on a single bulb cannot influence retailer behavior. But a 5-cent multiplied across every qualifying product sale in every qualifying store adds up, the spokesperson said. And the academic literature on upstream market transformation confirms what common sense suggests. When you offer incentives at scale, supply chains respond. Over the past 12 years, federal records show that several grid operators, including PJM, have paid American Efficient a total of more than $500 million at these auctions. Grid operators use proceeds from ratepayers' energy bills to pay power suppliers and energy efficiency companies for the ability to produce power when needed. The payments were based on the theory that encouraging energy efficiency reduces the amount of power grid operators. The amount of power grid operators must procure lowers the cost of energy and saves ratepayers on their monthly bills. Those reductions are validated through well-established measurement and verification protocols used by utilities and energy companies across the country, the American Efficient spokesperson said. FERC strongly disagreed. Commissioners gave the example of an agreement between American Efficient and Home Depot over a $10,619 refrigerator. If a customer bought that refrigerator from the store, Home Depot would note it on a sales data sheet that it sent to American Efficient, federal documents show. American Efficient would then send Home Depot a micropayment of 15 cents in return for the environmental attributes of the refrigerator. American Efficient contends that it obtained the right to bid energy savings associated with that refrigerator into the PJM capacity auction through this arrangement and that PJM knew how it worked. FERC found the connection tenuous because the American Efficient's contract with Home Depot did not require the retailer to use the micropayment for any specific purpose, such as discounting or promoting the sale of the refrigerator. American Efficient argues that its contract with PJM in turn did not require the company to prove that the program caused demand reductions that would not have occurred otherwise. If there had been such a requirement, the company would obviously have designed the program and the measurement of its impact to comply with these requirements, the American Efficiency spokesperson said. Selling environmental attributes is not new, said Ari Pesco, the director of the Electricity Law Initiative at Harvard Law School. Pesco was traveling and not available for an interview, but pointed to his comments about the case on Twitter for context. American Efficient conjured up these attributes, which is a clever, fraudulent, or a little both, he wrote. Initially, the company seemed to be upfront with the grid operators about what it was doing, Pesco wrote, then later claimed that its payments to the retailers increased sales of efficient appliances. His plan appeared to unravel from there. However, Pesco questioned whether FERC's case is that straightforward. The contract between PJM and American Efficient doesn't require the company to prove a connection to the retail customer, as the commission maintains in its ruling. Conduct that looks bad can still be legal, Pesco wrote. American Efficient still has the legal options to fight the civil penalties. First, the U.S. Supreme Court is currently considering two cases that consider whether the procedures federal commissions use for assessing penalties comply with the constitutional right to a jury trial. In those cases, it's the Federal Communications Commission in question, though the ruling could apply to FERC as well. Second, FERC must now file a separate action in federal district court and prove its case from scratch in order to collect the funds. A trial would also give the company an opportunity to present evidence before a judge and jury. As for the criminal referral, the U.S. Department of Justice can choose whether to investigate FERC's claims. We are focusing on defending the business, the American Efficient spokesperson said. This was an American energy company built with private capital, advancing an all-of-the-above energy strategy that treated efficiency as a resource just like any power plant. It has been brought to the brink of financial ruin by a single federal agency acting as its own prosecutor, judge, and jury. American Efficient has few options to participate in capacity auctions. Of the grid operators in the eastern U.S., only one, ISO New England, still buys energy efficiency resources. Yet ISO New England became concerned about one of American Efficient's subsidiaries when it participated in the auctions in 2018 and partially disqualified the company from a subsequent auction, FERC documents show. The reason? The company couldn't provide enough information to prove its business model worked. And just a very quick update here about Phil Berger, who said this week that he's mulling some changes to election laws as the General Assembly resumes work for the first time since the Republican state Senate leader lost his re-election bid. He said that he's thinking that the early voting period should be shorter, at least in primaries. The biggest complaint I got from folks was the number of days of early voting, Berger said. It's something that we probably need to take another look at, particularly in the primaries. I don't know in the general election where you have a lot more people showing up, but certainly in the primaries, 17 days of early voting just seemed pretty excessive. It really stresses the local boards of elections. Rockingham County Sheriff Sam Page beat Berger by 23 votes, in part because he turned out more supporters during early voting. Well, we have run out of time for today's issue of the Assembly. We hope you've enjoyed it. Be sure to tune in next time. I'm Naomi Lambert for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is now available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time, and if you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.